שלום ליהודים, שלום לבני נוח, שלום לגויים. It's the evening of the sixth day, יוד א' בסיוון תשע"ה, פרשס נסר, the evening of the fifth day, Thursday, 28 May 2015, webcasting from the endless war against the Jews. Well, another missile of death was launched two nights ago from Gaza of the Philistines, which landed inside Israelite territory near Gan Yavne, I think. It did no physical damage, but surely terrified thousands of Jews. In response, the Israeli Air Force bombed and demolished four empty structures belonging to the group calling itself Islamic Jihad, which is an indication of what intellectual primitives these Arab killers are. The word Islamic in their name is utterly superfluous and redundant. It implies that there are other kinds of jihad, though of course we never hear of a Hindu jihad or a Buddhist jihad or a Methodist jihad. It's a name reminiscent of all those third world states that emerged in the 1950s calling themselves the People's Democratic Republic of wherever. Democratic means literally people power. So People's Democratic is also redundant, and of course every one of those People's Democratic Republics modeling themselves on the Soviet Union were anything but a republic of the people, but just the opposite. Just like the Soviet Union claiming to be run by a vanguard of the people, really the only party of the people who had the right to liquidate all other parties in a one-party state, which is another string of words of twisted logic. Party, or as in political party, refers to a part of the people. That's why it's called a party. So a one-party state, like a People's Democratic Republic, also implies the existence of other parties, but then one wants to know, where are they? A one-party state? This was the great contribution of George Orwell, who was a true socialist, rubbed wrong by the inequalities of his own class-bound, hide-bound England. But because he was an honest thinker, he saw pretty quick after the rise of the USSR, the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, that that revolution was turning out to be no benefit to the people. This was a dictatorship. Even worse than the Tsarist regime it had brought down, Orwell refused to swim with the crowd, the pack of the left, that wallowed in a hallucinatory appreciation of Mother Russia. Steeped in denial, they all were, except Orwell. So, to return to the failed attempt to massacre Jews two nights ago in the world's only Jewish state by Islamic Jihad, Israel responded as it has ever since the erstwhile Marxist dream of St. Simon Oslo began, the retreat from Gaza, starting 21 summers ago now. 1994, the IDF, as part of Paris' messianic Age of Oslo, retreated south in the Gaza Strip from its northern two-thirds. Then, not surprisingly, over the next 11 years, the Arabs learned to fashion rockets in the Gaza area stripped of the IDF, and mortars and that they made from scrap metal, and fire them into the southern third with its remaining dozen or so communities of Jews, until it became crystal clear to that great military thinker Ariel Sharon it was impossible to defend them under the current facts of life. The only way to defend them would be to re-enter and conquer Gaza. Only in contrast, in 1967, the world would not be applauding and cheering this time, but booing and sanctioning who knows what. In those 11 years after the first major retreat, Israel foolishly was too kind and too gentle and never went beyond the pinpoint responses that it developed. The IDF developed a way of getting back at the rocket launcher guys using great intelligence, gathering information, and keeping track of all the bad guys, and developing ways at striking at them. They knew their addresses, they targeted them from the air, and were careful not to harm innocent civilians. And this has been part of Israel's major character flaw since the days of King Saul. Some peoples, like the Huns, the Mongols, the Romans, the Greeks, in their empire building, knew no bounds in their killing and brutalizing of their victims. That's what the Turks did to the Armenians in World War I, but the Jews, our moral flaw is not excessive cruelty, but too much compassion. 1948, the religious kibbutz in the hills of Judea, Kfar Etzion, was besieged by the Arab enemy, and a relief column of Haganah was organized and set out on foot from Beit Shemesh. Along the way, they came upon an old Arab shepherd who saw them armed and marching, and the Jews, they weren't yet Israelis, debated what to do with him. There were logically three possibilities. They could make him accompany them, lest after possibility two, letting him go, when he might alert the Arabs to their presence, and the third option was to kill him. The debate ended, and the decision was made, these Jews, to let him go, believing he would not reveal their presence for whatever reason. So they let him go, and they went on their way, and they were eventually surprised by a band of Arabs who came upon them after being told by the old shepherd, and they slaughtered all 35 of them. I remember as well the efforts of Ward Charles Wingate a decade before then, that passionate Christian Zionist in the 1930s, who trained Haganah in how to fight Arab terror. I remember him having trouble with his Jewish pupils. The Arabs in Galilee in that period, like Arabs everywhere even today, raiding Jewish settlements, the kibbutzim, at their most innocent, to steal farm equipment, to steal fruit and crops. And in a bad mood during the so-called Arab Revolt of 1936-1935, they came to vandalize, to set fire to fields. So Wingate taught them how to lie out in ambush. And when some Arabs appeared in the dark and he ordered his men to shoot, some would deliberately shoot into the dirt. No small number of these socialist Jews preferred to let them vandalize rather than kill them. Some even recognized the vandals as the sons of local Arabs they knew and liked, and they didn't have the heart to kill them. Wingate, though friendly with Haganah leadership, there was not yet a serious Irgun. He thought more like Jabotinsky and made fun of these dreamers on the left who held out for some kind of compromise with the Arabs, some kind of condominium arrangement. It was not really until the final solution arose its ugly head in 1942 did the Zionist leadership of the left at the Biltmore Hotel in Manhattan finally resolve on the necessity of demanding not some kind of binational relationship, but a Jewish state outright. Already in 1936, though, Wingate was telling them to forget about a diplomatic solution arrived at through negotiations with the Arabs. The Zionists had no choice, he said, but to arm themselves and fight for what they dreamed of. Fight and kill, and he hoped they would choose him to lead them. That was Wingate's dream, and he spoke of it openly, this British intelligence officer who had been sent to the country to put down the Arab revolt. He looked forward to the success of the Zionist movement, and he believed they needed an army, and he wanted to lead it in their war for independence. And so Israel today remains the same Israel it has been since the days of King Saul, who let his enemy live, and then generations later, Haman appeared. Our Achilles heel is our compassion. The Arabs' tragic flaw is their unbridled cruelty and constant violence. We are mirror images of one another. So these missiles out of Gaza started 14 years ago, and Israel has never solved the problem because of its compassion and its unseemly desire, no less, to find favor in the eyes of the nations, to disprove their chronic ugly hatred, which is full of accusations of our evil designs. We'll show them what good people we are. What nice boys and girls. That drive was very much a part of the secular Zionist movement. The Goyim called them money-grubbing capitalists. Well, we'll show you. We'll live in communes where everybody has identical wealth. We'll all live in poverty. And one never used money, never carried it around. People said Jews were cowards who never fought back. Well, the Zionists would show them by becoming first-rate fighters. Jews were citified. Unmanly accountants and brokers and merchants. Well, the Zionists would show them what men of the soil they could be, what farmers they could be. But when it comes to the enemy, we remain still too restrained. We see them in Gaza as innocent civilians. We cherry-pick our targets. We bomb empty structures. when the truth is most of these people are overwhelmingly not innocent civilians, but ardent supporters of Hamas and Islamic Jihad and all these murder gangs waving the green and black flags of Islam. So the IDF smashed some storerooms in retaliation. Life goes on.
Hashem ro'i lo echzar bino tesheya Yitzeni almek menuchot yenahaleni Nafshi yeshovev yanheni Lemagel leitzel Leglema anshemo Gam ki yelech Yitzal mavet lo ira Raki ata imadi Shiftecha uishantecha My Hashem ro'i lo echzar binot tesheya Yitzeni alme menuchot yenahaleni Nafshi yeshovev yanheni Vema yeleitze reklema anshemo Gam ki elech Getzal mavet lo ira raki Ata imadi shivtecha Antecha, emayena, unita, fanai shulchan, neged zorerai, dishanta, shemen roshi, kozi, levaya. Ach tov, achesed, irdefuni, kol yemei hayai, vishati, bevet ha'shem, beorech yamim, ach tov, achesed,
And that was the famous Psalm 23. On the diplomatic front, court Jew Dennis Ross, the good cop to the bad cop of Matt Nindick in the State Department's Jew Boy unit, criticized on voiceofisrael.com Obama's sermon in that conservative temple inside the Beltway last Friday. He criticized Obama for criticizing Israel only and not what Ross calls the Palestinians. Quite true. Like Obama publicly siding with the wild asses of youthful black rioters about the oh-so-infrequent killing of some of their own by white policemen, while never saying a word about the frequent killing of some of their own by their own. Blacks are killing blacks by the dozens, and about this Obama says no more than he does about the Palestinians, a party at least as responsible for the failure of peace talks as Israel. Ross's point is well taken. No matter the sugarcoating of his recent love bombing of Israel, this one-sided blaming of Israel for the failure of peace talks is a true marker of the anti-Jew. But don't tell the IBJs in that congregation to call him on it instead of smiling, cheering, and applauding his anti-Jew words. Where Ross was characteristically foolish in his remarks was his continued striving after the phantom of the two-state solution. He seemed to support the idea mentioned in the last webcast when Netanyahu threw that bone at Mogherini, the idea of confining new construction to the settlement blocks, so-called. Ross said this could, quote, help persuade the international community that Israel's policies are consistent with a two-state solution. He said it could also harm the efforts to boycott, divest from, and place sanctions on Israel, close quote. Ross said by confining construction to the settlement blocks, Israel could expose the real goal of the BDS types, which is the destruction of Israel. He's right about that, but what is so bizarre is this refusal by two-staters like him to admit that the Oslo delusion, the two-state solution, their solution, went over like a lead balloon. It failed, but they hang on to it like a baby his security blanket. To admit its failure, I guess, is to admit that they themselves are failures, these Middle East experts, these peace processors, who may be the biggest phonies in history. Being a peace processor is one of those professions from which one does not get fired for failure to produce. None of these peace processors have ever delivered the goods, but they're never dismissed for their chronic failure. Why is that? Well, maybe the answer is that their role is not really about settling peace, but fueling the world's need to hate the Jews. For even good cop Dennis, who worships in the Church of the Two-State Solution, is faithful to its doctrine that there is a Palestinian people that was wronged by the Jews, and the Jews must make it up to them. And until they do, there will be no peace, and rockets out of Gaza will continue to be fired at us. I say, though, the Two-State Solution is as much of a phantom as the phantom Palestinian nation. It is totally not of this world. What does a two-stater like Dennis Ross have in mind when he speaks this way? I assume he imagines the creation of a new, independent Arab state in Judea and Samaria, absent any Israeli presence, because that's what they say. He imagines a Palestinian state on the western slopes of the hills of Samaria and Judea, looking down into the coastal plain, into Tel Aviv, and at Ben Gurion Airport. On this slope, western slope in Judea, on winter mornings, when the air is at its clearest, with the sun rising in the east, one can see from all the way north of the city of Tel Aviv to the chimney of the Reading Power Station on the beach there, south through Tel Aviv, through Hulon and Bat Yam, to the port of Ashdod and Ashkelon and the power station at the northern end of the Gaza Strip. It's like a third of the coastline of the state of Israel. The two-state solution, one assumes, envisions this territory at an elevation of over 2,000 feet above sea level, handed over to the Arabs, who we know in their majority are devotees of the Muslim Brotherhood, locally known as Hamas. And I say to Dennis Ross and all the two-staters, you gotta be kidding. Which Israeli government is going to agree to drive all the Jews from their homes and turn this real estate over to the Arabs? The two-state solution, formerly known as the Oslo Peace Process, is simply not of this world. The Oslo peace process collapsed in blood and gore, and that's been, you know, 2 decades now. Thousands of Jews were murdered, thousands more wounded, crippled for life, not to mention the thousands of Arabs that Israel had to kill and wreck their homes. The entirety of Oslo was the dream work of fools, of pinheads of the academic left, like Yossi Beilin and his cohorts with their PhDs in political science. Yet the dream lives on in a Dennis Ross and a Tony Blair. He has quit his job. We'll put the link up to a good piece from the Jewish Press today by Tzvi Ben Gedaliahu, summing up Blair's 8 years representing the quartet. 8 years in which millions of dollars and euros were spent on him and his entourage, which produced absolutely nothing in the way of progress toward peace. These peace processes, I tell you, have quite a scam going. They blabber about the two-state solution, never succeed, and never lose their jobs or salaries. And the reason they never succeed is thanks to their misdiagnosis of the situation. They have swallowed the magic mushrooms of the Palestinian Movement for National Liberation, which is this generation's psychological warfare against the Jews. This generation's way of sustaining the human need to Jewbash in a post-Holocaust world.
יש במה שעוד עתידיתי לקרות, מה כבר יכולתי לעשות? פעם מזמן הם שמחו עלי יותר, את סודם גילו צביטה בלחי, הם נתנו לי ואני טהור הייתי, אז לפני שהשתניתי קצת, לפני שהתלכלכתי בגוונים כהים. פעם כל כך רציתי להיות כמו גיבור מלחמה, רציתי להיות כמו נביא משוגע, רציתי להיות כמו סבי הזקן, רציתי שן שבי רצה להיות מוצץ. פעם כל כך רציתי להיות כמו גיבור מלחמה, רציתי להיות כמו נביא משוגע, רציתי להיות כמו סבי הזקן, רציתי להיות פעם כל כך
You're listening to www.deprogramprogram.com, broadcasting from the hills of Judea. I'm Shai Ben-Tekoa. Yeah, the legend of the Paleolithic Palestinian people has become the deicide charge of our time. It's common now to see on talkbacks and hear during street demonstrations against us in Europe and on campuses in the West that Israelis are baby killers and are committing genocide. This is all timeless textbook Jew hatred of the ages, lying about demon Jews and their devilish schemes and crimes. J-Post hard copy reported today on the situation in Frankfurt, Germany, where the local Jewish community has resigned from the local Council of Religions, presumably a body interested in peaceful coexistence between the different communities, because the Muslim faction participates in anti-Israel demos where anti-Semitic lies are commonly spouted. Muslims, of course, insist they have the right to criticize Israeli actions, and the Jews have no right to stifle their freedom of speech and criticism, with the Jews clearly seeing the irrational age-old hatred in play. At these rallies, Israel is smeared as a deliberate murderer of children. Same old, when, of course, it is the Muslims with a record of murdering Jewish children in schools and school buses and pizza parlors. And then in a separate story out of Bavaria in the south of Germany, where the governing Christian Social Union excluded Muslim school children from visiting concentration camps as part of educating the children of Germany about the Holocaust. And what was the government's rationale? Said a government spokesman, quote, "There are a lot of children from Muslim families who do not have a connection to our past. We have to approach this topic carefully with these children," close quote. To which I say rubbish on more than one count. First of all, if they are Germans, German citizens growing up in Germany, then like it or not, this is their history. But what I suspect is really in play is not this lame excuse, but the fear of protest from these children's parents, who would complain that this is indoctrinating them with Jewish lies, because there was no Holocaust. That's the common idea in Islam these days. This has been a problem in France and England in classrooms where teaching the Holocaust is now taboo because of the protests, and school authorities in Germany likely want no similar trouble. This is all part of the invasion of Europe by Muslims and the ignorance and self-deception of Europeans of what they have been doing to themselves. Speaking before of Tony Blair, there are those who have reported from England that in his time as Prime Minister, he deliberately opened the doors of immigration to Muslims in order to make the UK more of a multicultural society. You know what multiculturalism is? If Palestinian nationalism is the latest morphing of Jew hatred, then the multicultis are the successors in our time to communists. They are our generation's version of the communist drive to enforce equality by declaring it and denying all differences and eradicating differences, as Obama wants everybody to have health care, regardless of their station in life. During the Cultural Revolution in the 1960s in China, the communist mass murderer there, Mao Zedong, had men and women wearing identical clothes. Urban intellectuals and professionals were rounded up and sent to the countryside to work in rice paddies alongside illiterate peasants to teach them brotherhood. Today's multicultis cannot tolerate any criticism of Islam, for that is Islamophobia. This is the same totalitarian mindset that calls people opposed to same-sex sex and marriage bigots. The reality is that Muslims like these in Europe simply do not belong there, and the attempt to assimilate them has failed. Angela Merkel saw that a few years ago and said so. Though how to deal with the situation now is an answer no one seems to have.
חמת ריבוי הפגמים והקלקולים שקלקל על ידי מעשיו ענה ואמר אם אתה מאמין שיכולים לקלקל תאמין שיכולים לתקן אם אתה מאמין שיכולים לקלקל, תאמין שיכולים לתקן, לעניין התחזקות. לבל יפול האדם בדעתו מחמת ריבוי הפגמים והקלקולים שקלקל על ידי מעשיו, ענה ואמר, אם אתה מאמין שיכולים לקלקל, תאמין שיכולים לתקן, 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 לעניין התחזקות. לבל יפול האדם בדעתו מחמת ריבוי הפגמים והקלקולים שקלקל על ידי מעשיו, ענה ואמר, אם אתה מאמין שיכולים לקלקל, תאמין שיכולים לתקן, אם אתה מאמין שיכולים לקלקל, תאמין שיכולים לתקן, אם אתה מאמין שיכולים לקלקל, תאמין שיכולים לתקן, אם אתה מאמין שיכולים לקלקל, אז תאמין שיכולים לתקן.
Well, to conclude that last segment's focus on Europe, and particularly on Germany, where government policy is to teach school children about the Holocaust and to visit death camps, I hope someone there suggests a relatively simple solution. These Muslim kids, it's true, have no connection to the horrors in Europe, but they sure do to the horrors in Muslim lands during World War II, where their parents and grandparents cheered on the Nazis, and in many places collaborated with them. German schools might add to the Holocaust curriculum what happened in Morocco and Algeria, Libya, Tunisia, Iraq, Syria during World War II, where Muslims collaborated with the Nazis, where they pogromed the Jews, raped them, looted them, they helped round them up and pack them off to some 100 slave labor camps for Jews built in North Africa, where Jews were worked to death and tortured. I have a whole chapter in my book on the persecution of Jews in Arab lands during the Second World War. There's even a one-line ref for the situation at the end of the classic movie Casablanca. Well, German authorities could teach their Muslim kids about that slice of World War II. Okay, and that's it for this evening and the week. I'll be back, God willing, on Sunday. Until then, Laila Tov, Shabbat Shalom, Mehare Yehuda.